Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Greetings and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the bishops and people of Malta look forward to Pope Benedict's weekend visit to their islands. And a haven of hospitality and dialogue in the heart of the Eternal City. The Lay Centre for Students at Rome's Pontifical Universities inaugurates its new premises close to the Colosseum. This weekend, Pope Benedict heads off for his 14th overseas pastoral journey to the islands of Malta, which his predecessor John Paul II also visited twice in 1990 and 2001. Pope Benedict's brief two-day trip is marking the 1,950th anniversary of the shipwreck of St. Paul on the islands during his fourth missionary journey. The Apostle of the Gentiles is popularly seen as the spiritual father of the nation. The Pope will arrive in Malta on the afternoon of Saturday the 17th, and after paying a courtesy visit to the President of the Republic, will travel directly to the Grotto of St. Paul in Rabat. According to tradition, the Apostle rejected the comfortable surroundings offered to him by the islanders and chose to live in this subterranean grotto for the 3 months he remained on the island. The following day, Pope Benedict will preside at an outdoor mass in the morning and will then travel by boat to the port in Valletta for a meeting with young people before his farewell ceremony at Malta International Airport and his return to Rome that evening. Malta, which achieved independence from the United Kingdom in 1964, is home to around 400,000 people, 98% of whom are Catholic. Vatican officials have also suggested the Pope may meet privately with victims of sex abuse by members of the Maltese clergy, as he did on his 2008 visits to the US and Australia. Following widely publicised revelations of sex abuse cases on the islands, the bishops of Malta and Gozo in a joint statement last week expressed their grave sorrow and repentance towards all those who have been abused or hurt by members of the Church. Despite these concerns, the Bishop of Gozo, Mario Grech, says the people are preparing the warmest of welcomes for Pope Benedict when he sets foot on Maltese soil.
Notwithstanding what you have underlined earlier, I mean this negative propaganda, still our people are looking forward eagerly to not only meet the Pope, to see him, but I would say to listen to him. As you said, this apostolic visit is being organized, held to commemorate the 1950th anniversary of St. Paul's shipwreck on our islands. We traditionally call Paul our father, no? Because he was the one who begot us for Christian faith. And in this day and age, we really wish and look forward and pray the Almighty to send Peter, Paul's colleague, on our islands to confirm us in our faith, to help us acquire a new vision, faith vision, for not only our personal life, but not only for us as a church, but also for society at large. If I can express my personal expectation, and this is what I am trying to convey even to the community in Gozo, is that in Benedict we have a man of God. And in all this aridity, no spiritual aridity of today, especially in our continent, no? When with all the waves of agnosticism and laicism trying to obliterate the presence of God in man's life, we desperately need a man of God, a prophet of God, in the person of Benedict, who with his teaching, but more than that, with his own personal spirituality, can enlighten in our hearts this wish, to build again a sound, mature relationship with God. At the same time, I think that, and I believe, that in a society who has almost lost its conscience, and that's a very pitiful, I really am looking forward for Pope Benedict, who is the conscience of our society, to help us to retrieve this important faculty, human faculty, by which we can make sound, good judgments, which then can be translated into many good things. Unfortunately, nowadays, there is this conscience, is suffering a lot. Unfortunately, erroneous conscience has taken so much importance, has so many claims that it is infallible, that we are paying a very, very high price. So with Pope Benedict, the preacher of truth, the preacher of Christ, truth in itself, I am confident that he will help us to acquire a new conscience, not only on a personal level, but also on a social level. And if I can add a third characteristic, I firmly believe that for our nation, who is doing its first steps in Europe, in the European Union, Pope Benedict has a very interesting European vision, not only for our nation, but for all Europe itself. And for all those who are so committed in this political arena, I really hope that Pope Benedict, as he usually does, he can help us to have a clear vision of this new reality, of this new arena, where most of decisions, which really affect directly the personal lives of not only Maltese but European citizens, such decisions would be taken in a correct way.
Bishop Mario Grech of Gozo in Malta, they're looking forward to Pope Benedict's weekend visit to the islands. Nestled between the remains of a Roman aqueduct and a temple dedicated to the Emperor Claudius lies a little haven of hospitality and dialogue in the heart of the Eternal City. Rome's Lay Centre, or Foyer Unitas as it's also known, was founded almost a quarter of a century ago to provide hospitality with an emphasis on ecumenical and interfaith dialogue. Today, the centre hosts students from a dozen different countries from diverse Christian, Muslim and Jewish traditions. It also runs a packed programme of lectures and courses on church history, spirituality and dialogue, offering a warm welcome to visitors and friends from all over the world.
I like to call it an oasis in the city, because it's a beautiful, tranquil spot that is really very conducive for study, for reflection, for prayer. And we hope that people who come here enter into the peace of this space, and that it renews them and refreshes them so that they can go out to serve others.
Co-founder and director of the Lay Center, Dr. Donna Orsuto, is a professor at Rome's Gregorian University and a former consultant with the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. Following the center's recent relocation to the grounds of a Passionist monastery where popes traditionally went for spiritual retreats, I talked to Donna about the origins and the vision of this international interfaith community.
Well, really, the idea grew out of the experience of Foyer Unitas, because Foyer Unitas was an ecumenical center, actually started in 1950 to welcome non-Catholic visitors to Rome.
A revolutionary idea in the days before the council.
Exactly. And then during the Second Vatican Council, it evolved into an ecumenical center, a place to welcome especially the non-Catholic observers to the council. And it was a great place of dialogue, encounter, friendship, sustenance for people from different backgrounds who came there. So when I came to Rome already in 1979 and was helping out at Foi Unitas, this ecumenical spirit was very important for me. So it goes without saying that when the lay center started, my colleague Ricky van Velzen and I, both of whom had been involved in Foi Unitas, that an ecumenical dimension was essential, was important. So from the very first years, we welcomed people, Christians from other backgrounds, to the lay center. And then this developed gradually, and we not only welcomed other Christians, but people from other religious backgrounds, Muslims, Jews at times, and also at one time even Hindu students.
Now, a guest house is one thing, an ecumenical center is something quite different. How does this religious, this interfaith or ecumenical aspect form part of your daily life here?
Well, I think the important thing is what I would call a dialogue of life. There's a natural sharing of our lives with one another. So the lay center is not just a dormitory or a guest house, but it's really an intentional community where people on a daily basis are willing to share about their backgrounds, about their religious beliefs in a very natural way, which I would call a dialogue of life.
And religious affiliation, you're saying, is an important part and then of the people who come here.
It is. Obviously, the lay center has a strong Roman Catholic identity, so it's important, especially in the context of dialogue, that people really live their own religious faith. So we would have a commitment at the lay center to a life of prayer in the Roman Catholic tradition, the celebration of the Eucharist, also formation in Roman Catholic theology, that those who are Roman Catholic would really grow in their faith. At the same time, there's a desire to be open to dialogue, to learning about the other. For example, I remember once some of our students taking a group of us to the mosque for a visit, so that we could understand how Muslims pray. Another example would be we had a lecture by a Jewish scholar, Rabbi Jack Bemperot, and we also invited a Jewish musical group of young people here in Rome to come and play some traditional Jewish music. And so giving people not only an intellectual experience of learning about the other, but also to enter on a cultural level into the music of another religious tradition.
You have a very full program, don't you, of activities, lectures, and other cultural events?
That's correct. There is a lot going on here. We have actually three levels of activity. The first is we have the student community. This year we have students from 12 different countries. And so there's a full formation program for these students so that they would be in contact with leaders here in Rome who would help them to grow intellectually, spiritually, and so forth. Then we also have a local program where we offer courses and retreats and lectures for people who live here in Rome. And finally, we have an international program. We have programs for people who come from abroad for week-long intensive programs. For example, we will have this year the 6th annual Association for Catholic Colleges and Universities Rome Seminar. This is a seminar for university presidents and key administrators who are coming to Rome to reflect upon Catholic identity at Catholic universities, mainly in the United States and Canada. And so they would come to Rome for a dialogue on this topic.
I am kind of responsible for assisting and organizing those various programs. The other area that I'm involved in helping with has to do with the student community here. And then finally, I help with publicity, various things like newsletters and websites. And
a familiar voice on Vatican Radio, that of our colleague Rob White, who also works as assistant director of Rome's Lay Center after spending time there as a student some years ago.
Creating, providing materials, both print and web media, to promote the Lay Center and its mission.
Tell us something about the student community here then. What sort of numbers you are and where people mostly come from?
Well, this year we have 20 students living in the house from 12 different countries. We have 14 students living in the community this semester, the second semester of this academic year, who are Roman Catholics. And those students come from several various countries, including in North America, Canada, United States. From South America, we have a student from Chile, another student from Mexico. From Europe, we have one from the Netherlands, two from Italy. Then we have two students from New Zealand who are Roman Catholic. But then in terms of Christians from other traditions, we have living in the community this semester three Orthodox Christians, one from Serbia, Serbian Orthodox, and two Greek Orthodox students who are both from Greece. They make a great contribution to the life of the house. In addition, we have three Muslim students this semester, one from Albania, one from Egypt, and one from Turkey. Most students come to live at the Lay Center at least for a year, and all the students who live with us are registered at pontifical universities, even the non-Catholic Christians and the non-Christian students, which is very interesting.
If you had to describe in a word, what do you think is the most important thing that the students who are here for a short period or a longer time, what do you think is really the most important thing they go away with after their experience at the Lay Center?
My impression is the experience of dialogue, of living in community. For many students, this experience is very new. And for many of them, it will be the only experience of this kind of living that they will have in their lifetime. Because it's not simply living in a residential dormitory. This is an intentional community where we not only share, shall we say, aspects of what would be dormitory life in terms of a single room and sharing bathrooms and common spaces that are available to all of the people who live here. But more than that, we have moments of formation, moments of prayer. People are expected to participate in terms of how taking on house responsibilities. Everybody, for example, everybody takes turns during the week doing dishes in the evening because we have one meal together, the principal meals in the evening. So it becomes, it's not just a place people come to hang their hat, so to speak. I mean, it becomes theirs in a way. It gives people ownership. No, this is their community, it's their house. It's not just something they happen to sort of be passing through that belongs to somebody else.
You're talking about moments of prayer together. How does that work out very practically if you're having, for example, a Sunday Eucharist? How do other people from different denominations and different faiths take part in that?
We are a Roman Catholic community, you know, with a very strong emphasis on promoting ecumenical interreligious dialogue. As such, the prayer life of the house is Roman Catholic in nature. So we do have a weekly mass in which various priests and bishops from around Rome, principally, but also visiting, are invited to come and to preside at that weekly celebration of the Eucharist. And then we have other celebrations, principally based on the Liturgy of the Hours, according to the Roman Rite.
Would you also have prayers in other traditions or not?
We do not have prayers in other traditions that are sort of make a part of the regular rhythm of the community, no. People who live with us, who are or belong to other faiths, are certainly encouraged to pray in their own traditions, and space is given to them in order to do that. That's very important to us. For example, helping our Muslim students, for example, be in contact with or the mosque here in Rome, and to find what they need, spiritually speaking, in order to live their faith.
We had a Muslim from Ghana in the first semester who was up doing the ablutions for prayer at about 2 or 3 in the morning. And one of our students, who was an Anglican from Scandinavia, didn't realize that this is what was going on, thought somebody was just in the shower at some hour of the morning that was a little too early, and that prompted a conversation to just present itself. What are the forms of prayer? Where are the ablutions? What times of day does this happen? And actually then being next to a monastery can reflect on the pattern of life between Christian monasticism and the daily prayer life of every Muslim.
A.J. Boyd is a fellow and student of ecumenism and interfaith relations at Rome's Angelicum University of St. Thomas Aquinas. He's been interested in Christian unity since childhood and finds life at the lay centre an important addition to his academic experience.
Obviously, being Catholic means being open to ecumenism, to interreligious dialogue, and the opportunity to have that dialogue of life, that dialogue of charity, which always has to precede the dialogue of doctrine or truth. I've been to ecumenical and interreligious meetings for years in my previous ministry setting, but somehow you learn more when you're sitting at a dinner table or up at midnight talking about life issues with a housemate who is Muslim from another continent than you do at a one-hour-a-month meeting with the other pastors in town.
Now, you said being a Catholic Christian means being open to other traditions and other faiths, but it's not necessarily true.
Well, perhaps part of that, I think, is just a matter of reception of all the work that has been done. For example, I was born in the year John Paul II was elected pope, so I have a different experience than some of my colleagues in ministry and in academia. But the amount of work that was done by previous generations and in the wake of Vatican Council for Ecumenism, now we have so many dialogues, it's a matter of living them out, bringing them into the life of the church. There's so much that's been accomplished and is being accomplished. My generation's task is how do we unpack all these wonderful gifts? You just have to read the teachings of the Council, of the Popes. John Paul II was extremely clear that ecumenism is an essential part of being Catholic, not an extracurricular activity. And Benedict XVI has continued that theme as well. So it's not very difficult to see that kind of support from the highest level of the magisterium.
I think it takes at least one generation for the teachings of any council to come down to sort of the grassroots level.
A former lay centre resident, Aurelie Hagstrom, now teaches theology at Providence College in Rhode Island after deciding to specialise in the role of the laity in the life of the church.
For me, the lay centre is a kind of greenhouse for a theology of the laity. It's a place where we think about what it means to be a layperson in the church, and I think it's a kind of almost a laboratory for understanding the mission of the laity in the church. For me, living at the Lay Center actually gave me the topic of my research, which I have been engaged in the last 20 years. I wrote my dissertation, in fact, on the vocation and mission of the laity in the church precisely because I was living at the Lay Center. What I think is that the church's teaching on the vocation and mission of the laity is one of the best-kept secrets of Vatican II. Although Vatican II had quite a bit to say about it, I find that even 40 years after the Council, still lay people themselves are unaware of what the Church has called us to in terms of bringing the Kingdom of Christ.
There are those who are concerned, as you know today, that these teachings of Vatican II are somehow being lost or being rolled back, is the expression we hear. Is that a concern that you share or not?
I don't. I don't think that the teaching on the laity is something that's being rolled back or that's being forgotten. I think it's taken us some time, first reforming the liturgy and reforming how we think about mission, and now I think we're mission to the world, that is, the church's position in the world. And now when the church thinks so much about what its role is in the world, in the secular world, here's where the laity come in.
There are many, of course, at the moment who are saying if this role of the laity had been recognized earlier, perhaps we wouldn't be facing the crisis that the church is facing today. Do you agree with that?
I think the only silver lining of the crisis that I see as someone who is a theologian, particularly in this area of the laity, is that this, in a sense, forces laymen and women to understand that they have a responsibility within the inner life of the church and not just in the secular world.
On April 14th, 2010, staff and students at Rome's Lay Centre officially inaugurated their new premises with the celebration of Vespers led by Bishop Brian Farrell of the Vatican's Council for Christian Unity in the small 13th century church of San Tommaso in Formis, or St. Thomas at the Aqueduct. In attendance were ambassadors, journalists, members of many religious congregations and institutes, past and present friends and associates to celebrate this haven of hospitality for people of all faiths and cultural traditions. But just how much does the work of the Lay Centre reflect the direction and ideals of the Catholic Church and its hierarchy today? Director Donna Orsuto again.
What we're doing is a very modest project, a very modest activity of dialogue, a dialogue of life. And maybe, at times officially, it might seem that things are going in a different direction. But I believe that on a grassroots level, dialogue is alive and it's happening. And what I find very exciting is that especially among young people, these young adults, that they are building bridges for the future. I'll never forget once at our table having a Jewish student from Jerusalem sitting next to an Egyptian woman. They would have never met each other. Or Turkish students and Greek students, Greek Orthodox, Turkish Muslims sitting next to each other. And to me, that's a real sign of hope for the future.
This center seems to be very much led by women. Is there a particular, do you think, vocation, a female vocation perhaps, to this interfaith dialogue in your view?
I think that women do have a special role in dialogue. And I think part of it is the capacity to create a space, to create a home, to create an atmosphere where dialogue can happen. And I think dialogue isn't only an intellectual activity. Intellectual activity is absolutely important. But there's also an affective dimension of dialogue which is important. And I think that women, as well as men, of course, can create that. It's very important to create that space for dialogue to happen.
My thanks there to Dr. Donna Orsuto, co-founder and director of Rome's Lay Centre, to assistant director Rob White, to A.J. Boyd, a fellow at Rome's Angelicum University, and to Aurelie Hagstrom, associate professor of theology at Providence College, Rhode Island. And if you want more details about the work and the programmes run by the Lay Centre, you can find them at www.laycentre.org. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.